to an entirely new year of Storm with Spoilers. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and this week we're going to talk about award season. So our question is, who should host the Oscars? And my answer is the Muppets.
I'm Joanna Robinson. Welcome to 2019, and in the spirit of 2019, where we don't need fucking anything that we can't use, I'm going to say nobody should host the Oscars. We don't need a host.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I'm super glad to have been asked back for yet another year on this podcast. And my suggestion for who should host the Oscars is Amy Poehler, and literally anybody Amy Poehler wants to have hang out with her on Oscar night. Like Tina, let's get
Maya,
let's get pretty much anybody. And let's just let them come out and say what they want. It doesn't matter. No one cares.
I would be in for that for the BoJack Horseman in memoriam section. Just Will Arnett reading some names, but yeah, then a little animated BoJack Horseman
just
in
let,
the corner.
You know what? More importantly, I think it's more important that Amy Poehler, not only should she host, but she should produce the Oscars. Like, let's give her all the money and just let her do whatever she wants. And then people will actually watch it if that's how they want to, you know, if that's what their goal is. So those are my thoughts.
This week, we're going to talk about the Golden Globes, which have already aired, and make some Oscar bets, foolish Oscar bets, most likely, since those will be upcoming. And if you are a donator at our Patreon at patreon.com/stormofspoilers at the Maester or Small Council level, you'll get a bonus section this week about our New Year's resolutions, or as Neil will sell us on, intentions. This inspired, of course, by me going an entire year not falling down. Neil, how did you do?
I also did not fall down.
Excellent. Joanna, how did you do in 2018?
I have not fallen down yet in 2019. And that's the important thing.
That, I mean, honestly, at this point, that's all that matters.
We're going to figure out, on top of, you know, some renewed attempts to not fall down, what else we're going to intend to do next year. Also, quick reminder, Con of Thrones will be this year, this July 12th through 14th in Nashville. Tickets are on sale now. Make sure to get a hotel room and make sure to see us, as we will be doing multiple panels, including a live show down there in Nashville. It's going to be a good time. Game of Thrones will be on everybody's mind. Maybe Avengers Endgame. I don't know. We're going to have a bunch of stuff to talk about. Godzilla. Ooh. Ooh, it's going to be a fun July, guys. Anyway, Joanna, do we have any reviews to kick off the new year?
This reminds me of when, like, Dave floated over the holidays, like, maybe we could do a 5-episode podcast run on Godzilla alone.
And nobody responded.
But at home, I read it out loud to my roommate, and I was like, hell no, I'm not going to talk to Dave for 5 episodes about Godzilla. All right. So, We have a few things to talk about for my segment here. First of all, we've got a few reviews, including our first review of 2019 by Darby Act. 5 stars, a small celebration. Thank you guys for leaving all of your ratings and reviews on iTunes. It really helps us. Darby Act wrote, "This podcast is amazing. As a person who can't make it past episode 4 of the first season of Game of Thrones, I promise I'll keep trying at some point. I want to share all the love I can for this amazing podcast. The hosts are insightful, delightful, and instantly make you feel like you were their best friend too. It's just wonderful. I'll miss the show when Game of Thrones comes back on, but I'll eagerly await the next off-season tour. I do apologize for waiting so long to leave this review, but I wanted to wait until I can officially celebrate my entire year of not falling down. As it's now January 1st, that goal is officially accomplished. Thanks for just being amazing, Storm of Spoilers crew, and giving this joyful gift to the world." So thank you so much, Darby Act. I actually, I had a friend over, a friend who listens to the podcast, was at our housewarming thing that we do on New Year's Day. And someone was like, "Why do you listen to Joanna's podcast when you don't watch Game of Thrones?" He's like, "Do you know what they podcast about for like 10 months out of the year? Not Game of Thrones." So,
yeah, there's just not enough Game of Thrones.
So welcome all you non-Game of Thrones fans who listen to us.
I do want to say, though, for Darby, that I believe in you, and I believe that if you can get to season 4, you'll get Prince Oberyn, and then that will power you through the rest. That's how
it's also conveniently where our podcast picks up.
Oh, man, it's crazy.
Wow. Synergy. All right. Speaking of synergy, I will just quickly plug our own merch store. It's a new year. We will have some new merch at some point. But for right now, you can buy some of the classics to wear, perhaps at Con of Thrones, the convention. I was so overjoyed to see so many Storm of Spoilers shirts and like various other Storm of Spoilers merch at the con. That was really, really fun to spot you all that way. But if you go to chaosislit.com, you will see all of our merch over there.
Also,
including you can buy a shiny new Don't Fall Down pin. To start
I was just going to say, it doesn't say the year on it, so you can totally buy one now and act like you have had it for a long time.
I was thinking of getting a second one as this is my second year attempting not to fall down.
Oh, it's going
to
be like banners like, in the arena for team.
Exactly. Or like just badges.
Like Boy Scout badges.
Exactly.
Yeah. Love it. All right. And then finally, just a quick little one or two things about our Slack, which is where our Patreons, you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. If you want to donate to our Patreon, that gives you access to our Slack where a lot of our listeners, nearly like 1,000 of our listeners hang out and chat to each other and stuff like that. We're doing some auditing and cleanup in the Slack, and we've noticed that some of you have not responded to requests. So this is a blanket statement to maybe check your spam or, you know, junk mail for a Slack invite from us. You can always email us stormofspoilers@gmail.com if you have some questions about that. We will try to answer them. Also, if you are an active Slack member, you might want to know that Neil is now doing some fun Citadel of Crazy Town Theory crackpotitude on the regular.
We've moved it from let's wait for Neil to compose his thoughts to stream of consciousness weird.
Yeah. It's working well. I never thought there would be a Letterkenny theory, and yet Neil made
yeah.
one happen.
Oh, yeah.
So
there's there more go. Than one as well.
Oh, great. Okay, so that's all of my stuff. Neil, what do we do now? Remind me.
Oh, well, Joanna, I believe in this new year, we must do our best to come together and do some storm chasing.
Pew, 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 pew.
Yeah.
And I guess since you mentioned Letterkenny, I'm going to spoil yours and just make you go first here because it's connected.
All right. So, yeah. So our storm chasing segment, right, is when we talk about like whatever it is that we've been recently obsessing over that we won't be talking about in depth on the show. And Neil graciously let me steal Letterkenny from him. We've talked about Letterkenny on the show before. It is a Canadian comedy that is on Hulu. But I believe like the last time we talked about it, there were only 2 seasons on Hulu.
Yep.
Now all 6 seasons, including some specials that were hitherto harder to find, are all on Hulu. So you can check all of that out and be completely up to date with the show. We've gotten so many of our friends addicted to this show. And then, you know, you all just like start talking in the Canadian pitter patter.
It makes you like a nicer person, I think.
It's a joy to add it to your to your daily repertoire. And I will say that like I think the show is just getting stronger. There's usually like 1 episode per season that I'm not a fan of, and the one this season I think was the dicks one, which is like an obvious
well,
it's not gonna like it, or like fart book in season 1. There's usually like 1 episode,
it's always
so
the
you know,
silliest one. They always do that, like, one that's like yeah. the most ridiculous thing you can think of, and it gets
yeah, and like that's fine. It's fine that there's 1 episode per season where I'm like, all right, this is a little too silly for me, but otherwise A+ on board. Season 5 I think is still my favorite, but season 6 is really good, and there's some fun guest appearances from like Sarah Wayne Callies and one of the Trailer Park Boys and stuff like that. So,
oh my God, that was Sarah Wayne Callies from
yeah.
The Walking Dead?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My God. Exactly. That's amazing.
She vanishes into her bonnet, I will say.
She becomes a sheep.
So, yeah. So, Letterkenny, season 6 and all the seasons that came before it on Hulu.com. Do yourself a solid. I think it's really like starting to spread and catch on, I think.
Yeah.
And,
the excuses are over, America.
Yeah. Get on board. All right.
All right.
Dave.
Sweet. Yeah. Dave, what
oh,
do you got?
Oh, yeah. So I think last time we talked, or at least 2 times ago, I don't know, because we recorded some episodes in weird order, I had, you know, was in the middle of my reread of the Harry Potter series that was becoming quickly an audiobook dominated reread, which I was fine with. Update. I'm on Deathly Hallows, which is good. There was rough going through Order of the Phoenix that takes like even days, even if you're audiobooking. And Java decided to watch we decided to watch the movies together after I had finished the book. So we also got along with the movies. And in addition to that, I have rekindled my itch to get a first edition of as, a first American edition of as many Harry Potter books as I can. I've given up that I'm not going to get a like a Sorcerer's Stone. That's fine. I have like a third edition of that that I'm pretty okay with. And if I want to get like super correct collectory, maybe in the future, that's okay. But I was very happy to finally secure a first edition Prisoner of Azkaban that's in the mail. So obsession continues. Harry Potter's great. I keep finding new things, either in adaptation from book to the movie or just in the book I forgot about, or stuff in the book that's been further illuminated by Fantastic Beasts, which are kind of boring on their own, get a little juiced when the full wizarding world's at the tip of your brain. So I've been having fun.
Yeah, please, if you don't already follow Dave on Twitter, please do at DA7E for some like genuine laugh out loud, read them aloud to your friends tweets about the bathroom situation in Hogwarts, which Dave was ahead of the curve.
I didn't know that was a surprise to everybody. I was so surprised that nobody knew wizards just shat themselves and like disappeared the results and then adapted bathrooms.
Yeah, that's something that like JK or Pottermore, I guess, like announced. But where had you already, was that in the text, Dave?
So in Potter, if you are a part of Pottermore, they have three, I think, I don't know if they're free now, or they were definitely free when they were first released, books of collected writings that J.K. Rowling's done for Pottermore. They're like the little mini Fantastic Beast books, yeah. But they're short ebooks like Inaccurate History of Hogwarts or Politics and Poltergeists and things like that. The Inaccurate History of Hogwarts chapter or section on Chamber of Secrets involves that because the entrance to the chamber had to be completely redesigned by other dark wizards when Hogwarts adopted bathrooms from Muggles. So the chamber predates bathrooms.
Yeah,
man, that's blowing my mind right now.
Dave has some great P-Lake or P-Lock jokes. So,
it is a P-Lock.
Where do you go searching for your first editions?
There's actually, if you Google, if you just Google like collecting Harry Potter books or something, there's several sites, including one site's called Collecting Harry Potter, the other is called Abe Books, they have like sections on how to do it and know what you're looking at, and then directions where you could go to look for them and price them out.
Yeah, I was just looking at what's on ABE, and it's like $130 thereabouts.
Gotta wait and find one that you're willing to spend money on, and I found that one through passion, and it's the holiday season, so maybe I threw around some money I shouldn't have, but it's gonna be on my shelf with the other first editions, and one day I'm gonna have them all. And I'm going to be like, look, non-existent hypothetical children. Look at your non-existent hypothetical father's wares.
But you can't touch them. These books are not to be read.
Exactly.
All right. I have a lot of book collecting thoughts, but I will talk to you more about that off air. Neil, I don't know why I took over your section.
It's totally fine. So I have two things to talk about as storms that I have chased down. The first is a deeply regrettable situation in which I watched First Man in my home and realized that I should have really seen it in theaters because it's really great. But it also, I think, more importantly, I mean, it's a really well done movie. It's very technically interesting, but it's sort of a cold movie because it's about pain, because all of Damien Chazelle's movies are about like the suffering we do for great things. So it's great. I liked it. But it did remind me of the TV show produced by Tom Hanks in the 1990s called From the Earth to the Moon, which was one of the first like really big HBO miniseries. And I'm very mad also about this show because it's not available on HBO Go. You can get it on DVD, but it's usually pretty expensive. It's hard to find. And I'm mad that I couldn't like tell people where to find it, because there's a great supplemental thing, if you were to watch First Man, which is very much about Neil Armstrong and really doesn't dig into Buzz Aldrin at all, and then you go and watch the Buzz Aldrin or the Apollo 11 episode of From the Earth to the Moon, in which Bryan Cranston plays Buzz Aldrin, and it's all about like Buzz Aldrin's faith and how he really wanted to be the one to get out the door first and like step on the moon, and he had like all this, you know, these sort of like sermonish things to say when he got off the lander on the moon, and how just due to the way the door opened, Neil Armstrong had to go first, and he just sort of made up whatever he felt like at the moment, which I think is like super fascinating. There's a whole episode of TV. It's great. You guys should seek it out if you can. I'm going to continue to tweet at Tom Hanks until he figures this out.
Yeah.
Also happy to report that I am into The Expanse, which we're covering at the end of the month here, and I'm way more into it the second time. I also found out that like my roommate has read all the books, which I did not even know that was a thing. So he's helping me through it, and that should be fun.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Having a guide would probably help. I also discovered that friends of mine were book readers and Expanse watchers after having started The Expanse. And I'm thinking about it. I'm really thinking about doing the books. Granted, that there's a lot of reading to be done before we do an episode about it, but maybe even after the episode.
Ooh. Yeah. What I like about it is that I've never been able to be on the other side of that experience, where I'm watching and then asking someone who knows a lot of the answers questions. So it's super fun for me. Like, it's fascinating on like an anthropological level for me.
You're like, this is what people use me for.
It's like, oh my God, this is how Game of Thrones kind of felt. I mean, let's not play around. The Expanse is a fine show.
You should drive him into burnout. You should squeeze him like a sponge for all his Expanse knowledge.
So yeah, that's what I've been doing while we have not been recording episodes. Also lost my voice last week, so really glad that we didn't have to record an episode. But yeah, that's it. That's Storm Chasing. I think we're done.
Storm Chasing. All right, we're going to insert another section in here because we are, as referenced in a review to some people of Game of Thrones podcast, there's Game of Thrones news, which means that is worth discussing as always as we're building up to this final season. Somebody fill me in what happened because I'm ignorant to it, but ready to react to it, I guess, outside of the... I did see the snippet of little new footage, but that's... not as revealing as something?
Unless it is.
Is it?
I don't know. I think...
Well, I mean... Final season? Well, so we have a final season snippet of footage that played during the Golden Globes as part of a HBO premiere where Sansa gives Winterfell over to Daenerys.
Uh-huh. Willingly. And like, with like a joy in her heart at giving her ancestral family home to Daenerys.
She seems super excited.
More so than the like Brienne, who's very obviously not for it in the background.
Oh, it's so interesting. I wasn't sure that was what Brienne was doing, but I guess she would be maybe slightly more xenophobic than Sansa. It's so funny you're thinking of people being like racist towards Daenerys and Targaryens because she's so blonde, but it's kind of part, you know, like Targaryens have this history of conquering Westeros, and so the idea of giving Winterfell over to a Targaryen comes with strings. And there was a lot of like rutabaga, like a xenophobic talk about the Targaryens in season 7, if you'll recall, when Jon's like, I'm gonna go talk to the Dragon Queen, and they're like, no, Targaryens are evil, don't do that. And then he went and fucked one, so on a boat, no less.
Well, also Brienne is one.
Back to Brienne for a second. She's just like hardcore team Sansa at this point, so I imagine she's gonna be very skeptical about a lot of things.
Possibly. So what's interesting, I think, is that I believe this is, well, a couple things. So this is the scene that Hibbard wrote about in Entertainment Weekly, which is Jon and Daenerys and their retinue come to Winterfell, and it's meant to be like a very close parallel to season 1, episode 1, when Robert and Cersei come to Winterfell. And in that episode, Ned Stark says, Winterfell is yours, your grace, which is not like to Robert, which is not like, here's my castle, but sort of like recognizing his, you know, you're the king. Here's my home to you, my king.
You're currently the highest ranking person here.
Right.
Basically.
So it's a reference to season one, episode one. But this is also like, so the, we had like just the tiniest snippet of footage of Sansa looking over Jon's shoulder sort of suspiciously back in August. Then we had this write up in Entertainment Weekly, and then we have like just this slightly, a little bit more of footage. I believe this is probably like the opening scene of episode one right. of season eight, or if not that, like one of the earliest scenes. And this is like pretty much all they're willing to give away, right? Is that this is happening. That Jon and Daenerys are coming to Winterfell, which we knew they were doing. And that Sansa is going to be upset about the fact that she has to recognize the authority of this, dragon queen. So, that's something we know. We don't know how long that, like, animosity between the two of them will last. We do know that there will be some animosity between them. And, I don't know. It's
hopefully 1 hour.
Hopefully.
Or like they want us to think there's going to be animosity between them. And really the story is something else.
Hibbert, like, print. I mean, I know that Hibbert has a history of, like, printing whatever HBO wants him to say, but I don't think he would say this, that, like, they don't get along at first, is something that he says. And I don't think he would say that if it wasn't true.
Well, yeah. Like, I mean, well, and you can, I guess you could think, you know, there's plenty of reasons why Sansa would legitimately not be super into the idea of, you know, Daenerys and what she brings to the family.
Right. There's more foundation there than there was for like the Arya Sansa clash in season 6.
No, that's a good point.
Say, right.
Yep. Yeah.
And so that's all like interesting. But what's been and this is just like me doing some inside baseball, like personal venting or whatever. But what's been hard for me to see in the fandom is something has happened since the last season aired in the year and a half of no new episodes. Is that the fandom or fraction of the fandom, vocal fraction of the fandom has calcified into these, shipping, contingencies.
Would you call them shipping lanes?
Yes, shipping lanes. There's the John and Sansa people, the Johnsa people, and the John and Daenerys people, the Jonerys people. And I didn't know that this was like, had become such a thing in the fandom, because I haven't been writing that much about Game of Thrones, because, you know, there wasn't that much to write about, until I wrote some pieces about the scripts late last year. And I just wrote like something, just like with no bias. I don't care who John is in love with. Genuinely, I don't. I care who Brianna's in love with. I don't care who John's in love with.
Yeah, I know. My problem with this is that these aren't even the most interesting possible relationships on the show.
I really agree. But, it's said in the script, like, this is where John fell in love with Daenerys. This is where Daenerys fell in love with John. It just said that in the script. And I just reported that it said that. And, the fandom went a little nutso over that. And the John Sansa people, the Johnsa people, have put me on some kind of list, and they're very mad at me. And let me just, like, if you're listening, which I doubt, why would you listen to my podcast if you don't like me? But like, if you're listening to this podcast, I don't care. I promise, I don't care about who John loves. You know, he can love whoever he wants to love. Love wins in Westeros, as far as I'm concerned.
What? He's so obviously like gonna die at the end.
Sure. So what does it matter who he's in love with until he dies? I don't like.
Also,
don't
he's like, I mean, half Dornish. No, he was born in Dorne. He says some connections to Dorne. Let him love as many people as he wants. Is what I say.
It's fine. It's all fine. I don't care. what I do care is about, like, I would prefer, I guess, the fandom not be sort of like slotted into like Daenerys is great and Sansa is evil and or Sansa is great and Daenerys is evil. That seems to me like the least fun way to be a fan about Game of Thrones.
It's bad self-care, I think. You're just setting yourself up to be mad about something.
Be a fan however you want. I don't think HBO was intentionally leaning into this with their. I think they just literally picked the first scene of the season to like.
That has the most recognizable characters in it.
Yeah. The information they were willing to give out. But like, it just happens to be exactly fanning the flames of this weird part of the fandom that has cropped. I don't know about weird. Like, ship whoever you want to ship. That's fine. But like, what I don't
like
about...
But be nice to each other.
Be nice to each other. Be nice to people who agree with you. Be nice to people who don't agree with you. Remember, at the end of the day, it's just a show. A show we all like and are excited about, but it's just a show. That being said,
crush your enemies in all arguments.
All you Tormund Brienne shippers know where to find me. Outside of that, I'll fight you.
That felt personal.
yeah, so that's the season 8 stuff. We still don't have a release date, sometime in April.
And probably end-ish.
Just like at the same time as either Star Wars Celebration or Infinity War, Endgame. It's not called Infinity War,
Or exactly in the middle of those two things, which is the ultimate
way,
torture.
It's just, my head's going to explode.
It's going to be great. It's going to be so fun. And then to look even further forward, is there anything you guys want? Sorry, I've just monologued for a while. Is there anything you guys want to say about that on that subject?
I need more Tormund, obviously.
Yes, any Tormund. I got some Jorah. That was
Jorah's good. He was a good palate. Like, you know, he's a good appetizer for what I'm really here for.
There's just so much more they could actually use to be selling this season. It makes me frustrated, and it makes me think they are scared of podcasts like ours that, you know, might talk for 20 minutes about a couple of shots. Why would they give us something we could frame by frame? That being said, it's the final season. Why not, like, throw all the dice out there? I'll be interested. I mean, they won't. But if I were running HBO, I would ramp up, like, crazy noise to
I feel
to
like
the
they're
going to
do the exact opposite.
I know, because they're...
And it's still going to work.
They're the people that were like, let's put the premiere date in ice, and people love interactivity. It's so, like, obviously...
Oh, yeah. We loved that one, didn't we, Joanna?
Not always the brightest bulbs in the sign.
Neil, it's still frozen. Me downstairs in Neil's house, just losing my shit.
My poor router didn't know what to do with itself that day.
You know, HBO will do whatever it wants to do. We will still all watch the show.
Yeah, I feel like I've accepted it in my heart. I'm like, if that's it, like if they literally showed us nothing more, well, fine, whatever.
It's the same sort of thing where it's like the season that ends with Jon's death and then like pretends like it's not concerned with answering that question. Is like the last season ended with like the promise of an ice dragon fight versus a normal dragon fight, and they're going to put off telling us when that's going to happen for forever.
How dare you, normal dragon fight? Ice dragon isn't normal. How dare you?
No, I think undead dragon things are
I don't know.
Unholy still, right?
I will have a piece up on Vanity Fair this week about sort of this aspect of the fandom, and not just me bitching about it, but also some further thoughts I have about the way that
is it called Joanna's lips sink ships.
No,
bad gas travels fast in Westeros.
Bad gas travels fast in a small town. So anyway, and then we can look even further forward to the Game of Thrones prequel.
Yeah.
Which we're not supposed to call it that, but we're going to do it anyway.
It's a Game of Thrones companion series.
Until they give us a goddamn title, what else can we do?
It's called The Long Night.
It's definitely called The Long Night, but like, who knows? Anyway, the show that George R. R. Martin accidentally told everyone was called The Long Night, and HBO was like, please don't say that. And he's like, oops, announced its... We're recording this on Tuesday. They announced like they're pretty much their full main cast today, which is pretty exciting. We already knew that Naomi Watts and an actor named Josh Wishouse were in like the leading roles, but we got like all, you know, a deeper bench below that, including Jamie Kemple Bauer, who I first knew from Sweeney Todd, but maybe you know from Twilight and or being young. Hot Grindelwald in Deathly Hallows. Who knows?
Ooh, but, hot Grindelwald.
Yeah, not Johnny Depp, that's for sure. Anyway, so that happened today. And we also know a few things like that they are filming in not just Northern Ireland, which is to be expected, but they are they're also filming in they're scouting locations the Canary Islands, which is Spanish archipelago off the coast of Morocco, and is a sort of subtropical climate. I was looking at photos of it online this week, and it could definitely, in my view, be the Summer Isles if it decided it wanted to be, or it could be Essos. A lot of people think it might be Valyria or Volantis. It's got some weird mountain ranges in the middle that could like be volcanic, if with a little application of CGI. So all of that happened, and then I will wrap up in just a second. Thank you so much for your patience. But we should say that in the cast, there are a significant number of non-white actors in the main cast, which is a big departure from Game of Thrones. And so we've got Naomi Ackie, who I really liked in Lady Macbeth. Sheila Tim, who's not an actress I know, but is like a big on the London stage. And she's in a role that was reportedly offered to Letitia Wright from Black Panther. So like that sort of gives you an idea of what they were going for with that role, maybe. And then I believe his name is Ivan O'Jeremiah, and he's on Humans, which is a show I really need to start watching because all these great actors keep coming.
Oh, yeah. I watch Humans. It's good.
Gemma Chan, Letitia Wright, yep. Like all these great people. So, you know, that's been a fun source of stuff. So like, you know, it's fun to think of like where the show is going. It's fun to know that the show is already like way more diverse, than Game of Thrones ever was. And then the other person that I'm really excited about, I don't know if either of you saw the biopic Colette starring Keira Knightley, that came out last year, but, acting opposite her in that film is an actress named Denise Goff, who also like a London stage actress who plays this like genderqueer, real life genderqueer sort of pioneer character in that film. And I'm like, yes, give me a genderqueer lady. Give me like a brand. Give me a something. Do whatever she's going to do. I'm like here for. She doesn't always play those roles, but she might. And then last but certainly not least is Georgie Henley, who people, fantasy fans might know as Lucy Pevensey from The Chronicles of Narnia. And I was like, oh, fun. They cast another like young, cute kid like Maisie Williams. And I was like,
oh no,
wait,
she's probably old
time
now.
Time has passed. She's only 23. But I was like, oh, time has passed, Joanna. That's great.
So wait, this has a Lucy, a young Dumbledore, and a young Grindelwald in it, you say?
No young Dumbledore, just young Grindelwald.
Toby Regbo, Fantastic Beasts, young Dumbledore.
Young Dumbledore.
Great. I would like to point out the best part in my mind of this thing, which is a name that you have not yet mentioned, which is that they have a director rumored.
Oh, yes.
Or attached. Yes. She's attached,
attached,
right?
Attached. Yeah, attached.
S.J. Clarkson, who I guess people probably would only have known, like, if you watched The Defenders, she's one of those hired gun type TV directors where it's like two episodes of a bunch of different series. But also, S.J. Clarkson is currently attached to be doing the next Star Trek sequel. So she's stock is very much on the rise and is super interesting.
First female ever to direct a Star Wars film, a Star Trek film.
And then now she's going to direct the pilot for the Game of Thrones, first Game of Thrones spinoff.
Yeah, and like we should say this, that's another huge departure, like diversity wise. And then like, you know, Game of Thrones has a real shit reputation, or not even reputation, facts. Real shit representation behind the camera when it comes to women. Only one woman has ever directed a Game of Thrones episode, and that's Michelle McLaren. She directed 4 episodes. Her last episode was in season 4, and then only 2 women have ever had writing credits on scripts, Jane Goldman and Vanessa Taylor. Yeah, and their last episode was season 3. So it's been that long since a woman has, like, there's a lot of great, amazingly talented women who work on Game of Thrones, you know, Deborah Riley, who does set design, Michelle Clapton, who's costumes, our friend Paula Fairfield, who does sound. Like, there's all these, like, great women artisans. There's, like, one of the top producers is a woman. So it's not like there are no women who work behind the scenes, but, like, it's a bad look to have no female directors.
Yeah, and it's, and honestly, in the seasons 5, 6, and 7, there have been some points where it's shown. you know, and I don't think that's an unfair thing to say about the show.
So I think it's like, it's, you know, so this prequel series, which is show run by a woman, Jane Goldman, is already off to, like, you know, an incredible start having a woman direct this pilot. So it's great.
Yeah. Really, Jane Goldman is ready for this.
Yeah.
That
all of
we know.
The news, I'm super excited about everything. So, you know, here's to a potentially great prequel series. Dave, do you have any further thoughts other than schooling me on the presence of a young Dumbledore?
No. I just was Googling so I could make sure that I was picturing in my mind's eye everybody you were talking about in this diverse cast. And I was like, what? Two young wizards and Lucy? Ridiculous.
It's gonna be, here's my thoughts on this. Just in general, it's going to actually be really fun to start fresh with Game of Thrones because they're setting it in such a very different timeline. Like, very little, you know, we're going to know some of the sort of big ideas that might happen based on when it was done, but it's just going to be fun to, like, meet all these new Game of Thrones characters. And you know, honestly, to me, slightly more exciting than season 8, because season 8 is just feels like pressure constantly. It just feels like pressure.
Yeah, I will say season 8, like, this is really smart of them to, like, launch this. I mean, what else are they going to do? But it's really smart for them to launch this the way that they have, because season 8 is just so fraught, right? There's just so much pressure.
Yeah.
And like, so,
like, I'm stressed out on behalf of people who I shouldn't be stressed out about.
They'll be fine with their, like, millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Still stressed out for them. Yeah, I agree. And so it is nice to have this other thing to, like, distract us and be excited. Like, you know, they dropped this Golden Globes footage and then they dropped this casting news announcement like 2 days later. And that's sort of very Trumpian to just sort of keep the news cycle flowing. You know, so we'll have these other things to distract us. So even if season 8, I don't think it's going to be an overall disappointment. I think that there is no way that the ending won't be controversial. You don't get this big and finish up without some controversy. Just ask, like, Breaking Bad or The Sopranos or any show.
Lost.
So, yeah. So, like, that's just going to happen. That's not a me being, like, snotty about the show. They could deliver me my most satisfying ending ever. And other people will be pissed about it. So, you know, there's just going to be that around the final season. So
there's going to be dozens of people that unsubscribe from our podcast either way, just at the end of the episode.
I don't think
that's
the
series. Fuck these people. Well, they'll come back.
Blame Game of Thrones, not us. We're just talking about it.
I always just remember the last season of Lost being, like, split into two, and, like, the first half of the last final season, like, really putting the brakes on the hype. Game of Thrones has not had time to put the brakes on anything. So we're going full hype towards a wall one way or the other. We're either going to have enough momentum to get through it or not. But
Through.
Well, if we know anything about walls in Westeros, they don't work.
Mm-hmm.
So.
True.
It worked for, like, thousands of years.
Sort of.
I will say. Let's just say.
The idea of it worked. And then when we needed it most, it failed.
Fair. All right. all right. So that's all my.
That's a great place to end.
Game of Thrones.
Sweet. We're gonna move on to award season talk. Then after this short break.
Bang. Okay, so it's a new year. There's a new approach to us thanking our small council members on our Patreon. We have moved from thanking people on a monthly basis to thanking them on a quarterly basis. This was sort of a response to small council getting a little bigger than we ever expected it would be. It's so huge. There's so many people to thank. So it'll all go a little shorter these days, barring this long introduction. So I want to thank Robert Bowles, Chuck Parkey, Bria Mattia, Amy Newswanger, Cameron Graham, Christian Turner, and Nick Willard.
And then I'm going to come in here and I'm going to say some names, including special thanks to all of these fine people: Mark Jewett, Tom Shapansky, Elizabeth Mowbray, Andrea Coker, Mick Nick, Ashish Sridharan, and Betsy Lane.
And I'm going to come in saying names however I like. Thank you, James Barda, Shane O'Reilly, Jocelyn Land, Anthony Gole, Ralph Helm, Kelsey McKinnell, and Chelsea Pichel.
Woo! We did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're glad you guys are cool.
And we're back. We're going to talk a little bit about the Golden Globes that you've already aired. Before we get into our foolish Oscar predictions, we've each picked a high and a low from the Golden Globes broadcast. Yeah, please do.
I'm so sorry. Can we just say really quickly, in case you're just about to tune out because you're like, I don't give a shit about award season, just know that like we three have sort of impromptu today decided to enter into a potentially high stakes Oscar pool bet. So if you like,
the stakes are growing
when your podcast hosts put it all on the line for their beliefs.
This is going to get weird. We don't.
You're going to want to stay for our Oscar bet.
This isn't going to be like a Little Gold Men discussion where we just debate the nuance.
No, we're just betting. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, just
if you want more in-depth award season chatter, yeah, you can listen to my podcast, Little Gold Men. This is not going to be that. This is going to be us just like planting our flag and moving on. All right. So, but yeah, first we're going to talk a little bit about the Golden Globes, which happened on Sunday. I don't know if any of you watched, but we're just going to hit quick our high point and our low point. So, do you want me to start?
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, go for it.
I'll start with my high point, which was, which is very on brand for me and for this podcast. Game of Thrones star Richard Madden, aka Robb Stark, aka the one true king of the North, won a Golden Globe for a show that I thought was only okay.
But a lot of people like.
A lot of people like. Well, okay. First of all, it's like the top rated show in the UK in the last like decade. So it was a huge hit in the UK. Moderate hit on the Netflix. We're talking about Bodyguard. Richard Madden is great in it. I just don't think the show is great all the way through. I think it's fun and fine, and he's very not fun. It's very harrowing. A lot of people blow up. He's really, really good in it. His acceptance speech was adorable. I gifted the cutest part, which was a very like winsome, I am 16 going on 17, like little like grin and shrug and sigh situation. So I'm just a huge fan of Richard Madden. This show has been such a big hit that it launched him directly into like the James Bond conversation, which would be, I'm not supposed to be excited for like a white straight male to play James Bond, but I mean, it's Richard Madden. He's it's great. I love
it. What if
him.
They do medieval James Bond?
Did you see, I will say my highlight, might be that Idris Elba took like a selfie with Daniel Craig.
Yes.
Where he's like, what's all this? And then in the background, you can see Ted Sarandon, just Sarandos from Netflix, just like staring at them. And my friend and yours, Chris Hewitt from the Empire podcast pointed that out. He's like, Ted Sarandos is trying to like figure out how to turn this into a Netflix limited series photo right here.
Black Bond, White Bond.
Netflix just bought James Bond. All of it.
Yeah. It's like Bandersnatch, but you get to switch which race your Bond is halfway through.
Wow. Great, great, great.
People would actually like that.
Yeah, Casino Royale would be totally different if a black guy strolls into a high-stakes poker game.
Also, add a Lady Bond, and I am there for that option. All right. Who wants to go next? High point.
I'll go. Mine also very on brand, was a backstage speech from Alfonso Cuarón that a lot of people may have missed, but it did get around on the Twitter, where Alfonso Cuarón was basically asked kind of like one of those, silly questions where people are like trying to ask him. What they're really trying to ask him is, do you feel bad selling out your soul to go on to Netflix? And his retort was to first look at the person and kill them with his eyes because it was a dumb question. But second, he made a really great case for, you know, I think what's interesting, because I think there's been all this controversy over Netflix not putting Roma into theaters. And then
which
they weren't,
did.
And then they did, yeah. And then it still is in theaters. And he made a great point about, he's like, listen, this is a small foreign film. It's from Mexico. It's not in English. Like, it's not the kind of thing that studios are just throwing money at the moment. He's like, with Netflix, we were able to make it, and they did do the right thing in the end, which is it's still currently in theaters. So, I think it's interesting because, you know, we don't get to hear from filmmakers. We talk about filmmakers a lot, but we don't always get to hear what they say. So it was a real interesting moment of honesty where he's like, listen, man, like, this whole thing got made because Netflix is the ones who have money. And if they're willing to invest in me, I am super into that, which is sort of the default position for most filmmakers. So I thought it felt like the end of that discussion, but it's not, obviously. But it felt like it should be. Also, are we considering the Fiji Girl to be a high point or a low point? Or, like, what's going on there? Did you guys see the Fiji Girl?
I think it's a low point, honestly.
I couldn't decide where. It's like a midpoint for me.
She's, like, very cute, but, like, it's not that I hate that she did it. It's that I hate that it, like, worked.
Yeah, it felt too staged.
It's like that one, but everyone's talking about her. We're talking about her right now. It's like that one woman who wore red when everyone wore black last year. And I'm just sort of like, yeah, but then it worked. Like someone interviewed her a year later, the woman who wore red to the Gold Shield last year. They're like, what's she up to? And I was like, fuck, her stunt worked. It sucks. Sucks that like it's fine if the Fiji Girl did it for like prank, but she didn't. She said she did it to like try to elevate her status in Hollywood. And I'm like, you know, like if she was like, fuck you, Golden Globes, you don't mean anything. I'm going to photobomb everything. But she's like, I'm hoping to get cast off of this. And the internet's like, okay. And I'm like, so, you
Fiji
know.
Water's like, here's your check.
Yeah, Fiji has never been like more talked about. Fiji's like, all right, you did your job, Chica.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it may have worked. I did buy a bottle of Fiji water this week, and I normally don't buy bottled water. Like, I was at a gas station and I was like, I need water. I grabbed Fiji water. It was terrible.
It worked even harder on you. That's incredible. All right.
And I don't even care about the Fiji water girl.
Dave, what's your high point?
Oh, my high point is Olivia Colman winning, or at least I social media watched the Golden Globes, and that was the thing that I was like, oh yeah, and actually had to stop and talk to my partner about, because I was not behind a lot of these year's award winners,
yeah,
which I'm sure we'll get to on our lows. But the other thing that did happen to steal my attention is a little gossipy piece of red carpet gossip. This actress named Chrissy Metz apparently called Alison Brie a bitch on a hot mic, or they were like, here comes Alison Brie, and they cut away and she mumbled something that sounds like she's a bitch. And although I don't think that actresses should have to worry about this, I enjoy watching the scrum of various stands attacking each other on Twitter in real time from a live gaffe to both actresses being interrupted in the middle of an award show to give comment and clearing up that gaffe.
Yeah, okay. So since I don't think any of my coworkers listen to this podcast, so I'm gonna talk about my coworkers for a second. This is not negative towards my coworkers. This is negative towards like the industry that we work in, which is to say, like, my esteemed colleague Nicole Sperling, who is an incredible reporter, was in the Golden Globes room and is like the person who went up to Alison Brie and was like, did you hear what Chrissy Metz said? I'm so upset that Nicole had to do that, but I know that that was her doing her job really well. Do you know what I mean? And so it's not a knock on Nicole, but it's a knock on like the fact that this is even a thing, but it is a thing, you know. For the record, Chrissy Metz has denied that that's what she said. And I haven't listened to the audio, but she's denied that that's what she said. And Alison Brie's like, wait, what? I like her. I don't know what's going on. So it's a bit of a controversy, but it is very on brand that Dave was very excited.
Well, for me, it's like you're visiting like, you know, a pier or something, and you go to the fish shop and there's like this big murky tank, and then the guy comes along and like drops a little bit of food in, and then there's like a huge fucking scrum of tiny fish you never saw before. And you just kind of watch it out of like horror. You're like, Jesus, there's that many fish in that murky water. And in this case, the murky water is maybe somebody called somebody else a bitch on a red carpet, which is just like, sometimes I'm not an adult.
I also think that you should be allowed to call someone a bitch.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Do you know? Like, yeah. I have nothing against Alison Brie, but like, you know, actors are humans too. And like, yeah, it's a business and you have to be like nice to all the people you work with. But like, it is nice sometimes to see people have like actual opinions about things.
Also, some people are bitches.
I felt similarly when Evan Rachel Wood like took to Twitter on the wee hours of Monday morning to be like, oh, so we're just going to ignore the Bryan Singer thing? Like, what the fuck? And I was like, yes. Thank you, Evan. So,
ooh, get mad. Speaking of which.
Yeah, do it, Neil.
First of all, let's start the lows right here with Bryan Singer.
Yep.
Bryan Singer is a low point. Period. Yep. But him celebrating the Golden Globe win on his Instagram, which I had to find out, like, you know, four people removed because I haven't followed. I don't think I ever followed Bryan Singer on Instagram.
No.
Great choice on my part. Yeah. But him celebrating that, gross. But also, so I would encourage people to seek out on the filmscorerejects.com an article that Christopher Campbell wrote about two movies that are movies in which there are really good, earnestly good performances, but they are actually bad movies. And those two movies are Bohemian Rhapsody and Green Book.
I agree.
And those two movies won all of the biggest awards at the Golden Globes, which, you know, it's one of those things that when you see it happen, you immediately start Googling, like, who actually votes for this shit. And it's a
and
bunch,
then you're like, oh.
It's a bunch of people you never heard of from the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. Who do reporting in Hollywood and criticism in Hollywood for publications around the world. I don't care what they think. The Golden Globes are fun, but I don't actually care.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But is, also, this, yeah. It's like, those aren't good movies.
Well, okay, so I watched, after Green Book won, I watched Green Book, which I had just was like, oh, I don't have to watch this. And then I was like, oh, now I have to watch this. So I watched it like the next day. I genuinely actually don't think it's a bad movie. And Mahershala Ali is great in it. And actually Viggo is really good in it too, I think. But it is like a stale movie.
Right.
In terms of like, it's not like necessarily in what Mahershala is doing. Mahershala is doing a great, 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 great job, with a lot of nuance. But like, in terms of the sort of Driving Miss Daisy-esque, like, you know, magical Negro-esque, and just sort of like, you know, we'll hop right over to my low point, which is Peter Farrelly's acceptance speech for Green Book, where, you know, he just talked about how important this film is, and like something that really just rubbed me the wrong way about that. Like, I don't want to like hate on Green Book in its entirety, but we should say, for people who don't know, that the character played by Mahershala Ali, Don Shirley, is that his first name?
Yeah, Shirley, Don Shirley. Last yeah.
name. Don Shirley, his family has come out and said, like, this is not, does not represent our father's experience. The film itself was written by the son of the Viggo Mortensen character and based on his father's anecdotes. And they interviewed Don Shirley before his death. And they interviewed, I think, some members of his family as well. But like, the Shirley family is like, this is a gross misrepresentation. I will urge you to read, if we're urging people to read things from our websites. My colleague Cam Collins has a great piece over on Vanity Fair, about the whole Green Book controversy and why it's problematic. And Cam is like, you know, like a Black gay culture writer, I think has like a very tremendously solid insight into what is good and what is bad about what Mahershala Ali and Peter Farrelly are doing in this film. It's nuanced, but it like fundamentally underlines the problem of this movie. And especially when that movie is up against like, or in the larger Oscar conversation with films like Black Panther or If Beale Street Could Talk, which are, like Black creators talking about the authentic Black experience authentically. And then this is like, Green Book is like, oh, here's a palatable, you know, watered down through the white lens version of the Black experience. Obviously, Mahershala Ali is bringing his own Black experience to it, but like, Peter Farrelly's like, here's the Black experience. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to hear it from you, Peter Farrelly. <Yeah. laughs> Not when Barry Jenkins and Ryan Coogler are making movies. So that's just sort of where I am with Green Book, right? I wouldn't be mad if Mahershala Ali won, but I would be mad if Green Book were a serious contender in the best.
Well, it's one of those things where I guess it's not even, they don't have to even be bad movies. It's just, they're like fine movies. But it is interesting where we're at when this award season doesn't seem to have any like clear front runners. And so it's weird. It's interesting to see where different groups are sort of gravitating to. But also I feel similarly about Bohemian Rhapsody. Most of it is pretty messy and feels sort of inauthentic because of a lot of the stories you've heard about this being sort of the band's movie and not necessarily Freddie Mercury's movie, even though Rami Malek, great. And it, like, the last 30 minutes, that Live Aid thing is great. Like, it's a really, really technically well done sequence. But yeah, just sort of fine or below fine. And for some reason, Bohemian Rhapsody won. And, you know, it's weird. I didn't like it. It was a low point for me.
Dave.
Wrapping up the low points really quickly. No Black Panther love. And if you're going to do an award show that doesn't matter, you could have at least honored something genuinely good that the Oscars are going to overlook.
Well, we can only say we're not, we're about to get into this like betting thing that we're going to do. We're not doing the technical categories, but I bet you Black Panther's going to clean up in some of the technical categories, at least. That's where they like to.
I don't know.
Genre
if,
films.
If I were betting, I'd say if Black Panther is going to win a lot of stuff, it'll clean up. But if it's not, I think it only wins like one thing.
Yeah. Like a token thing.
I would bet that it and First Man split editing and maybe like a sound editing. Like one of them is going to win.
Oh, see, I was going to say sound mixing. Yeah.
I would say costume. I think it's. Costume's
another really great one.
It's like partial. Most of the costumes that appear
it could win
digitized
visual,
at some point.
Well, I don't think it'll win visual effects.
I don't think it would win visual effects over like, okay, we're getting into a little Goldman tech category, but I don't think it would it win visual effects over Infinity War with the like Thanos technology.
And I don't think it's winning like cinematography over Roma.
No, we're going to talk about all of that, but like, I do think maybe production design, maybe cost. I think there's like a multiple technical awards that it could win.
Sure.
But, you know, like Mad Max cleaned up in the technicals. So,
yeah.
We'll
see. Yeah, but this could also be a year that, like, Mary Poppins comes in and just takes all the design shit because everyone's like, ooh.
Mary Poppins, stock
Aquaman,
is low.
Aquaman, you could throw in there.
Stock is low on Poppins hype, I gotta say. So, one more low point before we move on. Let me just say, I've seen Vice since the last time we talked. That is a shit show of a film. Christian Bale is great in it. I'm
it's
not
like,
mad.
It's
that
like
he
watching
won
sandpaper.
Globe, but like, it's awful. Like, it's such a mess.
I liked it, but I get it.
Right? But it's like, my hot take on that is like, if it had been a 5-hour, 6-hour miniseries, I think it could have been great. But it was just like, he was just trying to throw too much at the screen. Like, especially when the concept is as jarring as, like, here's a person who just radically did all this shit in the pursuit of ultimate power. That is such, like, a heavy thing to join with Adam McKay's, like, light-hearted whatever. It's a balance that worked in The Big Short and just doesn't work here for me. So, anyway, that's my advice take. All right, we want to get into these.
Yeah, so I don't know how we want to do this. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 categories. We've each picked who we think is going to win that category. Nominations are not out. Because we seeded at what point we're going to be able to make our picks,
it's
we
like
don't
a
know
draft.
Each other's picks.
We're doing like an Oscars draft.
Which makes it hard for me to say right off the top of my head what we're betting on. Do we want to do... We each say our thing for a category, and then we bet on that category somehow?
No, I think it should be an overall, just like who...
We can figure the math out later.
Who guessed the most correctly? But I just really like that you're not willing to put stakes on something until you know how good your chances are of winning.
Yes, right?
Why? It's not very sportsmanlike.
It's not very cavalier of you.
So what are we talking about stakes-wise here?
I mean, this is something we decided to figure out right exactly now, but I'm wondering, like, do we want our listeners to...
I have an idea.
What's that?
We each get to pick out, sight unseen, from a list of all the movies released in 2018, what we think is the worst movie of the year. And the losers have to watch the other two's, like, movies. So, like, if I don't win, I have to watch Dave's choice and Joanna's choice.
How about... The losers have to watch the winner's choice.
Okay. Yeah. Or that. The losers have to watch the winner's choice.
Two people have to watch one bad movie.
Yeah.
I'm into that.
We each pick what, and we don't have to do this now. We can do this later.
This is like, I don't know if these stakes are high enough, guys.
Well, this is very low stakes theater here, and we have to live slack it.
I like the idea of force watching something because I do think that, you know, Joanna dodged a puppet bullet last year, and I wouldn't mind making her take that puppet bullet.
See?
Oh.
Like, we have to, yeah, and you just have to do it.
I think it's mostly going to land on me. I think I'm the one who, like, skipped the most things last year.
Well, and you don't have to, it's not, doesn't have to be a movie you saw. It's just whatever you think was the worst movie of last year.
Yeah, you could Coal Canary mine us if you needed to, or you could, we could make you take a puppet bullet. I think I've already found one thing that I'm doing if I win.
It's really funny that you guys think I'm going to lose when I have an award season podcast, so.
Oh, I mean, I'm sort of expecting to lose, so I'm just trying to help you pick the best worst movie.
All right, here's the deal. I think this is a good starting point, but I also want to open this up to suggestions from the listeners.
Okay.
So, you know, we have time to figure out the stakes on this, but like, I want the listeners, because we'll figure out the stakes before the nominations are announced, which is not till the 22nd. I want ideas from our listeners. We will all three agree on something.
Right.
We won't just like,
basically, if y'all don't come up with a better idea, this is what
it's
we're doing.
Be this. Right. I love
fair.
It.
I like okay. it. All right. Let's start off with Best Picture. Joanna, you got first seed.
All right. So, wow, this is high pressure right away.
Yeah.
For me to
we're
pick.
This is not the Oscars. Picture. We're giving away the good stuff first.
What is going to win Best Picture at the Oscars? I don't fucking know, Jess.
She says like 30 seconds after saying, oh, I am on this award season.
Oh,
podcast.
Yes.
So you're thinking
I'm going to have the best
picks. Like, the shit talking has to start now or it's not going to start at all.
Take the outs on Venom.
God, I
think about how much you'd pay out.
Okay, so let me, as you're thinking about this, I'll give you the odds from Vegas or the bookies. Okay. Roma has the best odds. It's +120.
Yeah.
Green Book is second, and The Favorite is third. That's if you trust betting markets.
That's crazy.
The Star is Born second, Green Book's third.
Oh, sorry. A Star is Born is, it's Roma, A Star is Born, Green Book. These stupid websites.
It's just really going to depend what Bradley and Gaga decide to do between now and the Oscars in terms of promoting A Star is Born, if I'm being honest.
Let's set stakes now. This would be really great before the nominees are even out.
Bet it all, she said. What could she said? Fuck it. A Star is Born.
A Star is Born. Neil, Best Picture.
Oh, no. Now I have to pick a movie that I don't like. No. You know what? I'm going to take Black Klansman, because I think Black Klansman's like the legit dark horse Best Picture.
Oh, you're doing what we call on Little Gold Men, voting Joanna's heart.
Yeah, or it's like has Spike ever won a Best Picture?
No, I don't know.
Yeah,
he's
maybe it's
ever,
a Spike payback.
He's only ever won like an honorary Oscar.
Yeah.
So like he doesn't have an Oscar.
Because you know,
his honorary Oscar doesn't count, but like, you know.
Yeah, but you know how the Academy is old and they like to pay people back for having great careers.
Yeah, but they're also like so white.
Honestly, they've done it with so many white filmmakers. They should at least do it for Spike at this point.
I mean, should is different from will, but I like your pick. Dave, what's yours?
I'm taking Roma, and not only because it has the best odds, but because it's my favorite movie of last year. So I could vote. I vote with my. I aim with my heart. No, I aim with my eyes and shoot with my heart.
Beautiful.
Sure.
All right, we're gonna roll to Dave again. This is the
you can
category.
Do the same thing here.
This is the category that we're all mad we didn't get first seed for. But it's only fitting that it goes to Dave. Dave, what is your first seed pick for a best animated film?
Into the Spider-Verse. I really have gotten involved in following the artists on Twitter since seeing it my second time, and they are completely psyched with their Golden Globes win, which has triggered even more cool stuff on tweets. I'm all in on this movie and its many animated styles. I'm still learning things about how they accomplished it. It's a great movie, and even though other, you know, mostly Pixar or Disney entries in this year, some of them have looked really good and operated really well. I don't think they've been as risky and therefore not as successful in what they've managed to do as an animated feature. So Into the Spider-Verse.
I completely agree with you. I love Into Spider-Verse. If I could have picked just one thing to champion in this whole silly bet, I would have been Into the Spider-Verse. But since I got second seed here, I will go with Incredibles 2.
I got the final seed, and I think I may sneak away with this one because I'm taking Isle of Dogs, because I was thinking if I were a very old, very white guy, that would be the one I would understand the most of all these animated films.
I mean, it's really like I actually just did an animated award season story for our magazine, and so I got to talk to all these animators, and like I will say the Isle of Dogs lead animator Jason Stallman, who is also a Leica animator, was my favorite person to talk to. He was complete and utter joy. Though I love the Spider-Verse people, but like just the art of claymation is like, you know, whatever your feelings about Wes Anderson and his decisions about Isle of Dogs, like the artistry of animation of stop motion animation, which is just like so laborious, you know, is just like, it's so impressive. All animation is laborious. All right. Neil, roll us over into cinematography. Why are we doing a cinematography bet, Neil, when we're only doing six categories?
Because cinematography rules. Also, it's extremely my brand as the person who picks out the shots. Don't tell the internet this, by the way. This is the person who mostly picks out all the shots for one perfect shot. Cinematography feels like an easy one. Although, if a movie like Black Panther were going to steal one, it might be right here. But I think it's going to be Roma. So that I'm taking Roma.
All right, Dave.
I'm going to once again go with my heart and go completely out of left field. It's probably not going to get a nomination, but I enjoyed Benjamin Loeb's work on Mandy in making us.
I wish Mandy should be nominated for several technical awards.
I agree, and then you know you got to free the tiger, and so I'm going to go with that and pick him.
Great. Well, I'm going to go that. Leaves me my first choice, even if Roma's probably going to beat it, which is James Paxton's work on If Beale Street Could Talk. You know, Barry Jenkins films are beautiful films, and this is no exception. So I will, like, If Beale Street Could Talk is not a film that captured me the same way that Moonlight did, but I think all the time about how beautiful it is and those, like, portrait shots that Barry Jenkins is becoming famous for.
So, yeah. I think Beale Street might be the most underrated movie for some of the technical awards, like editing and stuff like that. Like, Beale Street's the one that could sneak in. It'll be like that movie that comes in and steals, like, three technical awards, and people are like, wait, what?
Yeah. All right, best director.
Oh, me first. Best director. Interesting. Definitely not Bryan Singer. This one, you know, it really does come down to, I think I gotta go all in on Spike.
Okay.
Or
yeah,
I'm going Spike Lee, because I feel like there's another obvious answer, but I don't know. I think maybe that movie's gonna win a couple other different things.
Great. Well, I don't know if you're talking about my obvious answer, but my obvious answer
yes.
here because I would like to win this thing. So I am picking Alfonso Cuarón.
Oh, damn it.
For Roma, which means
I don't know how I thought.
Pick something else.
Bradley Cooper, I guess. So I want to win too.
Somebody's got a Bradley Cooper.
You thought you'd get to the third seed on Best Director and still get Alfonso Cuarón, Dave? No.
Well, I thought I would, like, once Neil went Spike Lee, I'm like, oh my God, am I going to be able to pull this out? I didn't think I'd get Roma for it, but hey, you know, let's do it.
All right. It's me again for Best Actor. Hi, it's me again. Interesting. Oh yeah, I've got a unified theory about this. This is easy. I think it's Christian Bale. Despite the fact that Rami Malek has a lot of support, despite the fact that my heart feels Bradley Cooper really deserves something for what he did for A Star Is Born, Christian Bale gave that speech at the Globes that was extremely calculated. There's this whole, like, if you listen to Little Gold Man, there's this whole theory that the Golden Globes, if you win a Golden Globe, it doesn't really necessarily predict you winning an Oscar because it's the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. What the fuck do they know, honestly? But if you give a viral, like, really powerful speech, it can be an audition. And so I got multiple texts from some of our award season people being like, oh, Christian Bale just won himself an Oscar with that speech. So
because he got political, but he didn't do any Trump stuff.
He got political.
He did a Mitch McConnell
joke. And he, like, laid on this weird, weird, thick Cockney accent, which is not his native accent, and was, like, really charming with his wife. It was just, it was a beautiful performance from Christian Bale on the Golden Globe stage. So, there you go. Dave.
I'm going to, I mean, I really hate Bryan Singer, so no. I'm going to take Bradley Cooper, still try to win this thing.
Oh my god, you guys seriously left Rami Malek to the end? I'm still not taking him.
Oh.
that was my thought. I was like, you know what? It's not even worth winning. Maybe it's a good performance. I didn't see
you
it.
You know who I'm taking?
I'm not going to do it.
Because the Golden Globes fucked up and they didn't know it. They did not nominate. Well, did they? They didn't give any awards to First Reformed.
Oh,
and Ethan Hawke is my choice because one of these acting ones is not going to, it's usually at least one category that's not obvious. And this might be the one because you're going to split tons of votes between Bale and Rami Malek and Bradley Cooper. So this actually could be sort of a weird category. So I'm going Ethan Hawke.
And I actually think we're all going to get who we want possibly in the best actress category as well, which is our last one. Dave is the final first seed pick. What did you pick, Dave?
Olivia Colman.
I knew you would. It's a great pick. It would be my second pick. But my first pick, based on the same theory about Christian Bale, is Glenn Close. Out of nowhere, Glenn Close won herself an Oscar with that Golden Globe speech.
And the reaction. Great one.
Yep.
Well, damn.
Yep. It's gaga or it's nothing, I think.
I think it kind of has to be. I mean, my heart wants to pick Toni Collette, but we all know how this ends with a horror movie. I think Hollywood could do a Nicole Kidman because she also put on a bunch of makeup. So it could be a congrats for putting on a bunch of makeup year. But no, I guess we'll go with Lady Gaga.
Just to get those points. Those Spike Lee points.
Yeah,
you gotta get them back. Watch Bohemian Rhapsody like sweep everything and we get nothing from this.
It wasn't the best Oscars of our hearts.
So these are our best.
If Bohemian Rhapsody sweeps everything and none of us get any points, then we all have to watch Bohemian Rhapsody.
Again.
Oh, I've already seen it, but I'll watch it again.
Go, you could just pretend.
No, I'll watch it again. All right. So that we've written this down, we've typed it into a document so it's sealed in stone, but more importantly, we've said it out loud on air so you guys can hold us accountable. We'll put these picks somewhere as our, like, I don't know, foolhardy slapdash Oscar bet. Please do send in your ideas for what our stakes should be. I was gonna like make us do one of the short films because I like those. That's always where like you win or lose an Oscar pool bet, but I haven't had a chance to watch any of them and I don't want to make that decision.
It's also hard to do without nominees. It just in most parts of the United States, you're not getting tons of shorts
exactly
thrown at you.
I'll have opinions on the shorts laters because I that was very squarely down to me. I always watch them for the Little Gold Man podcast. But for right now, these six categories, we've planted our flags. Please tell us how you want us to humiliate ourselves if we lose, or punish our friends who lost. And that is it. Oscar season.
Excellent. Neil, what are we doing next week?
Oh, we got all kinds of stuff we're doing next week. We're going to go deep into the new greatest surprise superhero trilogy in the history of cinema, which is, what are we calling it? Is it just the Glass-iverse?
Unbreakable 3?
The untitled Unbreakable Cinematic Universe.
He's alive, damn it!
So we are going to be talking, I'm assuming, about Unbreakable, Glass, and Split. Most specifically about Glass, because it's new. So if you're going to see anything, see Glass. I would assume that you've already seen the other two.
Have an exciting news, guys.
Go for it.
I have talked Java into going to the Alamo Dress House.
You didn't say Shyamalan that marathon. Earlier.
Wow, that's
she
like
has not seen any of the three movies.
Oh, that's like sink or swim. Like,
well, I mean, the first one's going to be tough, obviously, because that's a real movie about eventually superheroes. Second, Split's going to be fine because James McAvoy acting thing right up the alley, and then Glass is going to be rolling the dice. But I'm going to get all my study for next week's episode out of the way this Saturday.
Wait, so that thing they're doing then, like, if you go to that and see the trilogy, you get to see them film early, right? Is that?
That's correct. Early and for free.
Oh. Well, shit. I saw that they were doing that. I just didn't realize they were doing it this weekend. That's fun. All right.
Yeah, it'll be super fun. And maybe Java will also survive it.
I'm sure ours is sold out already, but I will be sitting a press screening, so we will be ready to talk Glass. I'm actually like bizarrely excited for Glass, and I should know better. But here we are. I mean, Unbreakable is a great film, and I really loved Split. So I, you know, like, what can I say?
Yeah, and Shyamalan's movies haven't been bad for a little bit.
For a while.
Yeah.
People who are like, things are looking up. Shyamalan are behind the times, man. No, we're back on the Shyamalan train. Here we go. Glass Trilogy. Get up to speed if you haven't yet. So.
Excellent. So until next week's Glassathon, where could people find more of your work on the internet? Let's start with Neil Miller.
Oh, hi. You can get me over at filmscorerejects.com. We have a bunch of fun stuff for you to read. You can get me on Twitter at Rejects. And don't forget to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers on Twitter, where there will be more tweets soon. And if you need us, email us stormspoilers@gmail.com.
Excellent. And Joanna Robinson.
You can find me at vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. Or I will see you over in the Storm of Spoilers Patreon Slack.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find my other podcast, Fighting in the War Room, at fightinginthewarroom.com. We still have our top tens up. And even though our dear friend Katie Rich is on maternity leave, she popped out another son.
Congratulations, Katie Rich!
The bros are celebrating in her absence. Yeah, so until next week, guys, this will be my first time wishing you in 2019, but I wish for you to not fall down.